Hi, this is Chris Kepler with Does This Happen to You? The podcast where we explore the more bizarre ways of getting through your day. This week, we continue with the Oh My God series from The Drunken Cyclist, a blog on WordPress. And here is Oh My God, Part 26. In episode 25, I discovered the reason that Oh My God's room was dripping into the bar, as well as the fact that he had adopted the habit of only eating with his hands. For the rest of the dinner, I tried to avoid glancing down to the other end of the table for fear of what I might see. I think those at my end of the table, Maggie, Cece, and Paul, were of the same mindset, and thus this resulted in some great conversation. We ordered a few more bottles of champagne, which served to increase the volume and ignite more laughter. With each successive flute, Maggie was more forthcoming with the details of her life. Flute 1. She had just completed her PhD in molecular biology and was about to start a postdoc at the University of Michigan, but was not quite sure if she wanted to be a biologist. Flute 2. She was engaged to her high school sweetheart, whom she had dated all through their respective undergrad years and the 7 years it took her to get her PhD, but she was not sure if this was a lifelong relationship. Flute 3. Which is why she felt she slept with one of her professors, but had yet to tell her fiancé. Flute 4. She was using this trip as a bit of an escape so that she could clear her head and decide on her next move. She then added, "Who knows? I might meet the man of my dreams and leave it all behind." Then, turning to me, "Or I could just find a willing partner and have a few days of fun." Uh-oh. At this last statement, Cece, who was sitting directly on my left between Maggie and me, openly glared at her, followed by an extended and dramatic eye roll. There might have also been an audible tea-sucking sound, but I was far too worried about the developing dynamic to notice. I made a quick assessment of my situation. On the trip, there were a lesbian couple that had few, if any, social graces, a gay man who would rarely shut up, and had recently adopted the practice of interrupting me when someone asked a question in order to answer it himself, two women, neither of whom I found particularly attractive, who appeared to be openly vying for my affection, and a psychopathic, perpetually lycra-clad Emily Post nightmare with horrible breath, who was now sucking the sauce off his fingers, one at a time, punctuating each effort with a loud pop as he extracted the digit from his cavernous mouth. And the trip was just getting started. The following day was a loop day. There were rides out from the hotel, but we were staying and eating at the same hotel again that night. I went down to breakfast a bit late, hoping to miss all the clients as I had yet to assess what had happened the night before and had not developed any sort of game plan of how to deal with the multiple issues that I faced. On the way into the dining room, I ran into Paul, who indicated that he and Maggie had continued their discussion after dinner, where she continued to open up to her new confidant. He alerted me that the three of them, Cece had apparently set aside her differences with Maggie, at least for the time being, were going to drop back down into the Ourcq Valley for a ride, and that Anne, Ellen, and Oh My God, whom they saw at breakfast, had just left to do the same. Hearing the update, I was able to relax a bit. Generally speaking, at hotels in France, you have a choice of beverage for breakfast, coffee, tea, or hot chocolate, with some bread, including a croissant, and jam and butter. Since I have never had a cup of coffee in my life, am I the only one? I usually opt for hot chocolate if I cannot finagle a fruit juice instead. The bread, usually baguette, and croissant are always fresh, no matter how remote the hotel. During my delightfully quiet breakfast, I decided that I would visit the Abbey in Jouarre. Despite having visited the town countless times, I had never visited the Abbey, one of the first in France, founded in 630. The current buildings for the Abbey date from the 18th century, but the chapel tower dates from the 12th century. It is still a working abbey, but does allow visitors. After breakfast, I made the short walk over to the abbey from the hotel and quickly remembered why I had never been. It is closed on Tuesdays to visitors. Plan B. Even though I had it in my head I would not be writing, I really had no other choice. It was barely past 10 o'clock, and honestly, there is not a lot to do in Jouarre. I went up to my room and got kitted up, a cycling geek term that simply means put on my cycling clothes. After getting dressed to ride, I made my way to the garage to fetch my bike and headed out. I had decided to make the trek up to Château Thierry, an important and bloody city during World War I that was about a 65-kilometer, 40-mile round trip. I would take the scenic route and hug the local roads close to the Marne River, since starting just a few kilometers from Jouarre, the hillsides were adorned with grapevines, vines that produce champagne, and riding through the vines has to be one of the great pleasures in life. The ride went swimmingly, although the road was dotted with World War I memorials. There was a well-maintained memorial in every town, and practically every intersection along the route. It was a sobering reminder of what the region went through, and is why, for the most part, Americans are always well received in the area. The experience was so sobering, in fact, when I stopped in a Charlet-sur-Marne for lunch, I ordered a flute of champagne from the producer just up the road. Cost €3, less than $5. Then I ordered another. After the third coupe, my problems seemed to ease a bit, and after the fourth, well, my ride up to Château Thierry was no longer a possibility. Instead, I stumbled upon my iron horse and made my way back from whence I came. All told, I was gone for a little over 3 hours, with at least half of that being lunch, which made it easy to rationalize that I had been out riding. I was the first one back to the hotel, and I quickly made my way up to my room to catch the end of that day's Tour de France stage. While I do love watching bike racing on TV, and watching it in French allows me to hone my language skills a bit, in all honesty, I watched the tour for one reason: its soporific effect. As usual, within minutes I was asleep, drool and all. Per normal, the voice of the announcer awakened me. The race was nearing its conclusion, and the announcer could not contain his enthusiasm as the finish line approached. As I rubbed out the sleep from my eyes in time to see that day's winner, I could not help but think I was far from the only one across France that naps a bit during the meet of the stage, waking just in time for the final kilometer, thanks to the dramatic change in pitch of the French broadcasting crew. At the conclusion of the race, I hopped up, showered, and made my way back downstairs. I headed right out to the garage to both check to see who was still out on the road, and in hope that the still high July sun would help to eradicate my grogginess. Surprisingly, all the bikes were dutifully arranged off to the side of the garage, except one. It was strewn in the middle of the garage floor, which made me both relieved that I would not have to go out and track anyone down, and slightly stressed by the fact there were another 2 hours until dinner, and I had either to go back to my room and play the hermit or run the risk of socializing with one or more of the clients. I decided that I had had enough of the self-pity routine. I was, after all, riding my bike around France and, essentially, getting paid for it. So instead, I headed to the bar, ready to get my champagning on again. Much to my delight, the owner, bartender, was there and welcomed me heartily. Before I could even sit down, he pulled a bottle of champagne from the cooler and started opening it. He commented that he knew how much I had enjoyed the champagne from the night before, so he took the liberty of picking out a bottle of the Prestige Cuvée from the same producer. Every champagne producer makes a standard brut, which comprises 80-90% of their production. Many also produce a few other blends or cuvées, a rosé, a vintage, a blanc de blanc, made only from white grapes, or the more rare blanc de noir, made only from red grapes, and perhaps a prestige cuvée, almost always a vintage. Vintages are made only in the best years, and always from only the best grapes of the given year. I started to ask how much, but he raised his palm in defiance, indicating that this was on the house. Giddy up! As he poured the first flute, he intimated that he could not help but feel a bit sorry for me. He focused his pity for me on my most objectionable client, shaking his head and muttering, "Mon Dieu," on several occasions. He also recited the oft-repeated Napoleon quote regarding champagne. Le champagne, dans la victoire, on le mérite dans la défaite, et on a besoin. Champagne, in victory you deserve it, in defeat you need it. Exactly. As he poured the last of the bottle, the rest of the troop had started to assemble. We retreated to the dining room, where the de facto seating arrangement occurred. At one end of the table, we had Paul, Cece, Maggie, and me. At the other end were Anne, Ellen, and oh my God. Nothing really of note transpired during the dinner other than oh my God, intimating that he had spent a fabulous day with his two female guardians and could not have been happier. Ellen also admitted that they enjoyed riding with him and that he was quite the help at lunch. He gladly devoured any leftover food on both of their plates, saving them from either overeating or wasting food. I instantly thought that this was destined for disaster, but decided to keep that opinion hidden. Besides, I was distracted by what seemed to be a new, oh my God, talent. Since the night before, he seems to have adopted a new style of eating. Instead of taking a bite or two and methodically consuming his meal, tonight he was packing his cheeks full of food, keeping a steady supply stuffed in his pie hole. The look is not dissimilar to Dizzy Gillespie's inflated cheeks when he played the trumpet. Oh my God appears to do it for one main reason, so that he can talk. His newfound besties have ignited a bit of confidence deep within, and he does not hesitate to share. Eating, however, seems to interfere with the spewing of his world view, so rather than give either up, if only momentarily, he has decided to pack his mouth as full as possible. He is still able to talk, although it is tough to say if he is coherent, since every utterance up to that point was puzzling at best. It is also possible that there is a much more fundamental reason for his odd form of hoarding. He is able to repeatedly taste his meal, which he particularly enjoys, and given his audible sounds of pleasure, loud grunts, I choose to think it is a continual reassessment of the dish. The alternative explanations are far too troublesome. If you enjoyed this story, please let me know. Thanks so much for listening, and next week we continue with episode 27.